Good evening, everyone. I'm broadcasting live. March 20th. And to cut my meditation short this evening, it's been a long day, lots of different things. Got caught up in there goes my alarm. Yeah, I was doing homework. Anyway, here on time. So today's quote is I think quite an interesting one. Let's see if we can get 61. Nope. 61. 71. Oh yeah, okay. Yanja ko etang bikave uchati chitang itipi mano itipi vinyanang itipi. This which is called citta sometimes, mano sometimes, vinyana sometimes. There's many names for mind. Tang ratiya cha diva sassa cha. That by day and by night. Anya deva upachati anyang nirujati. Anya deva upajati arises as one thing, anyang nirujati ceases as another. One thing, one mind arises when another ceases. Sayatapi bhikkave makkato aranye pavane charamano sakanganhati. When a monkey grabs a branch, he lets go of another branch. Tang muchitva anyanganhati. Letting go of that one, he grabs another one. Eva meva ko bhikkave. In the same way, monks. Yang idang uchati chittang ittipi mano ittipi vinyanang ittipi. That which is called citta, that which is called mana, that which is called vijnana. Tangratiya cha divasasaccha. This by day or by night, and by night. Anya deva upachati anyang nirjati. Arises one, ceases another. It's a simple philosophy and claim, but it has deep meaning. You see, so science and, say, ordinary people have this idea of a substratum, most religions as well. So science is quite convinced that there is a substratum of reality. Religion is usually quite convinced that there's a substratum of mentality, the soul, the self, God. And so there's a lot of postulation of various substrata. And so science cultivates substrata that tend to accord with reality. Religion often not, but religion also does a better job according with mental reality sometimes than science. But nonetheless, the tendency is to postulate substrata. Substrata means like a framework, like a mind, a body, a three-dimensional, four-dimensional reality that we live in. Buddhism doesn't do that. Buddhism has a very simple take on the universe that this moment is real. This moment is an experience. And then it ceases. And then this moment is real. And that's that moment. So when we talk about mind in Theravada Buddhism, we mean that moment of mind. One moment of mind. One moment of experience. One moment of awareness or of contemplation of an object, observation of an object. One moment of experience. And so if you ask the question, who's right? It's not really the appropriate question. Scientists tend to scoff at Buddhism as being overly simple, simplistic, and they'll say, okay, well, maybe, you know, you're right, but you haven't said anything about reality, you know. You haven't figured out subatomic particles, or how to build an atom bomb, nor have you explored the vast reaches of the universe, the solar system and the galaxy and the known universe. You haven't really explored reality. We can say, no, we haven't. Well, the question is, to what end? The question of all of this is, to what end? Religion makes all sorts of claims about reality. And we can ask, what is the result? I mean, if it were useful and positive to delude yourself and make claims about reality that were not in accord with reality, you know, that had no evidence, that were not based on evidence, if that were somehow beneficial, then there wouldn't be much of a problem. Most religions would do fine, but because they tend to not relate to actual experience and reality, they tend to rely more on belief, they tend to be quite artificial and stilted or forced. I mean, if you step back, or say you step out of a meditation course where you've been studying your own mind and you know, what's really here and now, and then you contemplate one of these religions, pick any religion at random, and you contemplate what they're actually saying, it's shocking how absurd it all is. You know, what are you talking about? You know, what is this garbage? You know, really, I mean, so much belief. You know? There was this guy, he said this, he claimed this, he did this, and he will save us. Or there's this God up there, and all you have to do is pray or repeat his name or chant this or chant that, and he will save you. So they run into lots of problems, and I think wise people would tend to stay away from most of the religions out there because they tend to be not very closely aligned to reality. But science does a good job focusing on reality, aligning itself with experience. So they are able to run experiments that actually accord with the way things are, but they've got a different problem. And we can argue about what is more real, the substratum of physical and even maybe mental, let's say physical reality, or experience. You know? Which one is more real? We can argue about that, but it's not an important argument. Again, to what end? What has science given us? What has it brought us? It's brought us all sorts of magical, wonderful things like the internet. Right? The fact that I'm able to talk to people all around the world, it's kind of magical. It's brought us all this. Very powerful, this kind of knowledge. But has it brought us happiness? Has it brought us peace? Has it brought us understanding? And I mean I'm thinking of a specific type of understanding, really. Has it brought us to understanding of ourselves? No. No, people who study science get angry, become addicted to things. They have a hard time dealing with ordinary experiences, and so they suffer. They stress. They kill themselves. They drown their, soak their brains in alcohol or drugs because they can't deal with ordinary reality, right? Study reality so much, but can't deal with it. And then you have this Buddhist, let's say, a meditator who focuses on their reality, who looks at their experience. When they have emotions, they see them as emotions. When they have pain, they see it as pain. And experiences of seeing or hearing, they see them for what they are. They put aside any theories or thoughts about a substratum, about reality. Like, oh, here I'm in this room. They even lose track of being in a room. They just see the mind arising and ceasing. The mind arises, is aware of something, and ceases. And immediately there's another mind. But it's totally different. It's a whole new mind, a whole new experience. And they see this. You know? They're able to see a reality or a way of looking at reality for themselves that leads to objectivity. They're able to fully comprehend reality, I guess you could say. Because science, you can study it, but you can't fully comprehend it. You can't look at the wall and comprehend that wall is made up of mostly empty space. I mean, to give an example, but moreover, we're not able to comprehend all those things. I guess I would say it's not even worth, wouldn't even be worth it if we could. And in fact, our comprehension of things is part of the problem. Because when you think about entities, you have to abstract them, right? You have this mouse, right? What happens when I think of this mouse? There's something going on in my mind. There's an experience, and there's an experience which says, there is a mouse in your hand, but it has nothing to do directly with the experience of seeing the mouse, right? The seeing and the feeling that created it. It's all in the mind at that point. There are minds arising and ceasing, leading therefore one to the other. And I'm not aware of that. So there's a reality that is being ignored, because instead I'm focused on the idea of the mouse. So there's something that I'm missing. And as a result, when likes and dislikes come up, I miss them as well. So I like the mouse or I dislike it. And that's what leads to frustration and addiction and so on. So it leads us attached to things and people and experiences, and leads us to get frustrated and upset and bored and disappointed when we don't get what we want. So when we pay attention to that, as I'm picking up the mouse, I pay attention to the experience and then the thinking and the judging, then I am in a position to understand and to see the experience clearly and to not react or to understand my reactions and to see how they're hurting me and to slowly give them up. It's an important quote to help us understand where our focus should be. Our focus should be on experiential reality. That's what the Buddha talked about. So here, what do we have? This whole sutta is interesting. The uninstructed worldling, a putujana, right? Asutva bhikkave putujano, an uninstructed putujana, might experience revulsion towards this body. He might become dispassionate towards it and be liberated. Oh, he might even be liberated. Because growth and decline is seen in this body. It is seen and taken up. Okay, he's saying might be liberated from the body. Because the body is easy to see it's revolting as you get old and if you get sick and so on. It's possible for ordinary people to let go of it. But the mind we are unable to let go of. He says the ordinary uninstructed worldling is unable to experience revulsion towards it, unable to become dispassionate towards it and be liberated from it. Because for a long time this has been held by him, appropriated and grasped thus, this is me, mine, this I am, this is my self. Digaratan hetang bhikkave suttava suttavatto putujanasa ajjao sitang mamayitang paramatang etang mama eso hamasmi eso meyata. This is myself, this is mine, this I am. This is what we think of the mind, right? I mean, who doesn't think the mind is me and mine? The body we can let go. When the mind is pleased or displeased, that's me, that's I. Tasma tatra sutva putujano nalang nimbinditung nalang virajitung nalang vimuchitung. He's using interesting words. Revulsed, I guess revulsion isn't really the right word either. Nibbida is not revulsion. It becomes disenchanted, becomes dispassionate, becomes liberated. That's probably better. But it would be better to take, this is a famous one actually, because it would be better for the uninstructed worldling to take the self as the body. Take the body as self. because the body is seen standing for 1 year, for 2 years, for 3, 4, 5, or 10 years, for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, for 100 years, or even longer. But the mind and mentality and consciousness arises as one thing, and this is the quote, and ceases as another. The mind is flighty. The mind arises and ceases quickly. And this is really what I'm talking about, is the body appears to be a thing, right? If you think about the body, it's understandable that you would cling to it, but how can you cling to the mind? This is a different, the Buddha is exposing a different way of looking at reality from the point of view of the mind. Because from the point of view of the mind, even the body arises and ceases. And then he says, Tatra bhikkhave suttava, a learned Aryasavako, disciple of the noble ones, paticca sumupadam yeva sadukam yoniso manasikaroti. Well, with wisdom, considers paticca sumupadam, the dependent origination, iti imasming sati idang hoti. Thus, you see, when this exists, that comes to be. With the arising of this, that arises. Iti imasming sati idang hoti, imasupada idang upajati. Oh yeah, okay. When this arises, there is that. With the arising of this, that arises. Imasming asati, with the non-existence of this, idang nahoti, there is not that. Imasa niroda imang idang nirujati, with the cessation of this, that ceases. Yadidang, that is to say, avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnanang, and so on. This is a paticca samuppada dependent origination. And so what he's saying here is, this is how experiential reality works. You study in terms of cause and effect. There is ignorance. Because we're ignorant, we give rise to our partialities. We like some things, we dislike things, we chase after some things, we chase away some things, because we don't see things clearly. As a result, we're born again and again. And we have, anyway, it leads to suffering. I won't go into detail with that. The important point is that we look at reality from the point of view of our experiences. If you do that, there's really nothing. You become invincible. There's nothing that can gain power over you. Whether it be something pleasant that you want, there's no you, there's no thing. You see it, if you see it as an experience, it arises. If there's something that upsets you or frustrates you, that thing is just an experience. You see it arising and ceasing. You see the experience. What does it mean? It's just an experience. You see the frustration, you see the upset arises and ceases. You stop hiding, you stop running, stop living in conceptual reality with things and people and places. You start living in reality, the true reality, which is your experience. You start seeing what's going on underneath that chrome plating of beautiful things and desirable things and ugly things and scary things. Underneath, it's all just experience. Anyway, there's the quote for this evening. That's the Dhamma for this evening. Now, as usual, I'm going to put the quote, put the link to the Hangout up. If you would like to join and ask a question, you're welcome to click the link. Only if you have a question, and only if you're in a respectful, like no coming on naked or smoking or drinking alcohol or eating food. We should consider this to be a Dhamma hangout. Scare everybody away. You can go, Vanessa, if you want. All right, nobody with burning questions leaping to join the hangout. And I think I'll say goodnight. See you all tomorrow.